Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Humpbacks are intelligent and sensitive. Here, they have the peace and time they need to establish the vital mother-calf bond. A hug helps affirm one of nature's strongest connections. But they can't stay here. If they get hit by a storm in the open ocean, it could separate them.
That's the fairly unmistakable voice of the former US President Barack Obama, the narrator of Netflix's new nature documentary series called Our Oceans. And as the title suggests, it's five episodes dedicated to the world's oceans, the Pacific, the Indian, the Atlantic, the Arctic and the Southern. And the BBC began to make mainstream nature documentaries back in the 50s. But since then, the genre and our appetite for it has grown and grown. The central figure, of course, being Sir David Attenborough. So what makes a great nature documentary? What are the tricks that the filmmakers used to keep us hooked? Well, who better to tell us than Ken O'Sullivan, underwater cameraman and documentary maker, and Jerry Creighton, former operations manager at Dublin Zoo and now global elephant care consultant. And it's great to have you with us, Ken and Jerry. Hello to you both.
Hi, Claire. How are you?
I'm Jerry. Very, very well.
Hi, Claire.
Jerry, I watched a bit of this last night before I had to head off to another screen and watch the leaders' debate. And as I was watching it, I thought there's a risk that this might drive Jerry mad now, because it was giving sort of lives that we can identify, human stories almost, to the animals that it featured. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I watched some of it. Now, it is remarkably filmed. Obviously, it's a big budget and you've got such a compelling, distinctive voice, which all adds to a very good combination for an excellent documentary series. But you're right, like, one of the biggest problems that I see and have with a lot of these documentaries, and there is elements very much in that series, is this, you know, the anthropomorphism, like trying to put the animals into human-like situations. Now, I understand and I get that, you know, there has to be a way of selling it. It has to be appealing. But nature is at such a brutal stage. It's brutal, and the intensity of it. And you know, I would much prefer a stronger message is coming through in the documentary about why they're in these situations, why the world is the way it is, and the onuses with, you know, overpopulation, human domination of the landscape, and the consequences it has for these animals. Like, people worry about the animals up in the zoo. Well, it's actually the animals in the wild you should be more worried about, because they're the ones that's under threat. But the technology is incredible. Like, you've got the drone footage, you've got the low-level footage. Like, I watched the one of the animals in Gabon, like, when they're coming out of the forest, and it was remarkable. Like, hippos swimming in the Atlantic Ocean after leaving the lagoons. Like, very informative stuff, powerful images. But this need to sanitize, you know, these programs to make them appealing to a general audience, it's for me, a lot of the times, is a very, very lost message on the reality of the savagery of nature, the threats that nature's under, and what people can do to help it.
Mm-hmm. Ken, what did you think? I mean, it is beautiful. It's a gorgeous piece of film work, isn't it?
Look, you know, the cinematography, as Jerry says there, is absolutely fantastic. I have to declare a little bit of an interest, because I know James Honeyburn and Renee, the people behind it, and they're great people. In fact, they've been speaking to them, but they wanted to shoot some scenes in Ireland. This has gone back about 4 years now. I was busy and then they were busy and it didn't happen. But I agree with pretty much everything Jerry has said, you know, in terms of... It's a terrible word, anthropomorphization. I don't know who came up with it, but it's basically putting human characteristics onto animals. Absolutely. Look, we shouldn't be doing that. And it comes down, I suppose, to the integrity of the filmmaker in terms of telling the story and telling what you see out there, right? So there's no point in me going out and seeing, here's beautiful animals, beautiful sharks, and somehow, you know, I heard this term, a box of chocolates documentary, where you say, oh my God, the world is beautiful. Now, you know, when BBC brought out, you know, after making natural history documentaries for 50 or 60 years, and they are, you know, the world's founder of this genre, if you like, you know, when they did Planet Earth 2, one of the executives came out and he said, this is the greatest missed opportunity in the history of broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
Why? No conservation. And in fairness to Blue Planet 2, which was James Honeyborn's series who also did Our Oceans, they did. They started to tell these stories. And you've got to do that. And look, I'm making documentaries for 19 years now. We've always done it. And I'm, you know, I was told that advertisers didn't like to see bad news, that they wanted to have dreamy stuff. But look, I remember having a discussion with the commissioning editor in RTE, and I was, you know, they were kind of said, look, you know, people don't want to see the bad news. And I was kind of desperately trying to win this discussion. And my kids were small at the time. I was telling them a story every night, and I kind of racked my brain and said, look, what does every story need? It needs conflict. It needs a bad guy. It needs a Red Riding Hood, the woodcutter, whatever it is. And it's an opportunity to make the story more powerful. So we see the beauty of the natural world. But as Jerry said, we see the violence that is inherent in nature, and we see the conservation issues.
Yeah, and of course, now you can't tell the story of nature in any way, really, without addressing climate change and the damage that is being done to the planet. You can't be authentic in any way and tell that story without that narrative.
And in fairness, you know, there's been almost a scuppering of natural history filmmakers, you know, to absolutely include this stuff now, that you have to have it within that. And look, that's great, because this is a fantastic medium to tell stories, to get your message across to people for the natural world. And look, we donated all our work to the education curriculum a few years ago, and it was the first documentaries to be used in that. Many have followed from RT and TG Car. So it means that Irish teenagers are now seeing humpback whales, basking sharks off the coast of Clare, Kerry, Waterford, which is resonant, you know what I mean? So now you're creating education and awareness and people. Yeah. And look, I've done talks. I never have any problem convincing young people about conservation or any of this stuff.
Yeah, it's hugely impactful. And Jerry, it helps, of course, that we have the technology now, the drones, the high-tech underwater cameras. I mean, you can see it in this series that we're talking about today. We are getting to see more than ever before, aren't we?
Absolutely. The intimacy that this technology brings now to the animal kingdom is phenomenal. You kind of have four-dimensional, you know, filming approach where you can go underground, you can go ground level, you can go mid-level, you can go high above the animals to, you know, to give topography, to give, you know, immersion feeling that you're almost in the animal's domain and territory. Like, it's powerful, compelling footage to watch. Like, I've been very lucky to work with Shane Brennan and Moonlands Productions for over a decade, and working when we did the, you know, obviously the Dublin Zoo programme. And the one thing about that, you know, when we're talking about the message and the importance of accurate filming and footage, was a decision was made at the very, very start of that with the then director Leo Oosterweegel and Shane Brennan, that whatever happened was shown at the zoo. It was the reality of zoo life. It was the births, the deaths, the celebration of life, the macaque carrying her dead baby around for 3 days. All these things that happen, because that is the reality of nature. It's the reality of zoo life. But people would stop me on the street and say, wow, what a powerful emotional roller coaster ride you took us on. Using that technology, you know, having cameras on the islands, getting close-ups. It was remarkable footage, and it immersed the people into the reality of and it definitely gave them a much greater understanding and appreciation of nature and the complexity of nature. So it is beautiful, and particularly, as I get with the Obama, Barack Obama series, like, some of the footage is remarkable. Like, I mean, a red river hog, which is a species I previously worked on, and you see them coming out of the forest in Gabon onto the beach. And they're hunting for sea crabs, which I never even knew they do. Like, they're normally in forest and roots and veggies. Like, to be able to bring that footage and the grunts and the sounds and the three-dimensional and four-dimensional and five-dimensional effect and the vocalizations, it really is, like, makes you feel that you're part of their world. So, you know, that's why it needs to tie in with that comprehensive message of the animals and what we can do and what's needed and the human domination of the landscape. I was lucky enough to go to India to see, with Moonlands Productions, to film the rhinos and the Indian elephants in the wild. And I was there when the railroads, when the human domination, and elephants were killed by trains, and we had to stop the traffic to allow the elephants to cross from one area to the next. Like, it was dramatic drama, but it was reality and sending a powerful, powerful message to how we need to nurture nature and do our very best, because, you know, we're running out of time.
Yeah, like, you both will understand this, Ken. Like, Jerry mentions vocalizations there, which brings us to the sound. I mean, I think people will be surprised to learn that a lot of the wildlife sounds, they're edited into the nature documentaries, aren't they, post production, because the cameras can zoom in on the picture, but the microphones can't.
Well, I mean, look, it depends on the scenario, of course, if you're very far away from an animal, and depends on your microphone. But look, you know, I can only speak for myself. We bring a certain sound recordist with us pretty much every day. But I think, you know, television and film is an audio-visual medium. So for me, sound is a huge opportunity to convey how you're going to tell the story. And so, you know, all feature films, for example, use pretty much false sound. It's all created in a studio. So, you know, if Brad Pitt and somebody else are having a kiss, then there's somebody doing the Foley, as they call it, for that. They're kissing their arm and having a good laugh, and that's the sound. Or when a door opens, it's a particular sound that we expect. So, you know, a lot of sound is added in after. I wouldn't say all of the sound, but you can embellish the sound to try and deliver the story that you're telling. But it comes back to integrity, Claire, that, you know, that the, which I suppose comes back to the filmmaker, is that are you representing the animal truly? As Jerry said, you show everything that's there, but are you misrepresenting that animal, which a lot of, you know, programs will do, misrepresenting the species, things like sharks, and that's down to the integrity of the storyteller.
Yeah, but also, you know, going back to attracting an audience, because you want your audience to be as wide as possible. And if you have an over-focus on the gritty side, do you risk losing in particular your younger audience, Ken?
Well, that's a challenge, you know, on occasion. But I mean, I suppose it's down to, the skill of the storyteller. You know, you're going to tell the story that's there. And as I said, for too long, we had Box of Chocolates type documentaries that showed everything has been beautiful. But, you know, kids will watch a feature film. And if there's some bad news, if there's some conflict, if there's an antagonist in there, then that's a part of the story. So that's just my approach, Claire. You know what
All
I mean?
Right. Well, Jerry, I know that you won't get on a plane and watch anything else other than a nature documentary. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I find them highly addictive, and of course it is part of what you do, and you do learn from them. But you know, the focus on the quality of them, you know, in recent years is so, you know, so dramatic, and the influence that they can have on, when they're positive, like the Blackfish documentary resonated throughout the zoo world, had a huge impact, stopped, you know, these species of animals from being kept in captivity because they were clearly not doing well and they were killing people. And you know, it was a powerful moment in documentary history, and how it resonated throughout zoos, animals were kept, and everybody looked.
Okay, well, listen, I have to leave it there for reasons of time, but Jerry Creighton and Ken O'Sullivan, always lovely to talk to you both, and thank you for being with us today.